Hey, hey, how's it going? Hey, I'm Lee McCormick. Welcome to Tramps Like Us, a Bruce Springsteen podcast, episode 98, Springsteen Fandom, volume 11. I'm happy to be speaking with two great songwriters today, Tom Surzak and Gordon Berry. Both of these guys have just released some new music, and they're both big Bruce Springsteen fans. We're going to get into their music on this episode, as well as their love for The Boss. It's going to be a fun one. Thanks for listening via the website, trampslikeuspod.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you found us. Stay in touch via the Facebook group page, Tramps Like Us, a Bruce Springsteen podcast. So I first met Tom and Gordon about 5 or 6 years ago at Steve Earle's inaugural Camp Copperheads songwriting masterclass. It was 2014, summer 2014. It was a great week getting together with like-minded songwriters and Steve Earle fans, and of course, a lot of Copperheads are also Springsteen fans. They're smart people, you know. So I hope you enjoy this one.
Sitting here on Dickie's front porch, waiting for the last stragglers to come on down from Hellhole's obstacle course. The man from Bear Mountain Bridge called and said, hold him, you'll take a little more time. Cara, don't run, Cara, don't hide, take it real slow, let him inside. Say now you're the one who set the trip wide, and let him down that winding path, down to my torn road. Be careful where you're going to now, don't turn around, look back, just let it go. Anyway, anyhow, it'll all be over soon, just do your part, remember, lock and load. Now meet you out tonight down on my torn road. Let's take it from the top, you'll be the only one inside. When they make the drop, it's time to quietly slip back outside. I know where to go, been down that road before, and it won't be so easy to follow us down my torn road.
All right, it's great to talk to a friend of mine, Tom Surzak, fellow Copperhead. How you doing, Tom?
We're doing really good, Lee.
All right, man. And you got a new record out. It's good times, right?
Yeah, just released yesterday. So,
wow.
I'm really excited. So we're going to see how that works.
So let's just get into it here. Let's tell the listeners out there. I guess we met 5, 6 years ago at the first Camp Copperhead. That was like Steve Earle's masterclass songwriting kind of 5-day excursion kind of thing, right? So much fun that was.
Yeah, the first one he didn't really know what he was doing, which made it a lot of fun because nobody really had a handle as to what we were going to do or what to expect.
Yeah.
And I remember meeting you. Kind of funny, I was down at the house, that big white house down there, and it's like midnight and I'm sitting there and everybody's pretty much in, and I'm hearing what sounds like Sympathy for the Devil coming from the hill. I'm like, what the hell is that? So I figure I'm gonna climb up the hill and see what's going on. I go up there and there's a whole bunch of you guys just jamming away, and I guess some guy from North Carolina had brought some moonshine with him. You would have figured he'd have brought something, but he brought moonshine.
Yeah,
right?
That was his name, like Patrick Warren, I think it's J. Patrick Warren. Yeah, he had
yeah
like mason jars of like moonshine, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I took a swig of that, and then I realized why you guys were up there just playing Sympathy for the Devil, because you guys were all, like, just blasted from this stuff.
Well, that was so much. Yeah, I brought my snare drum with me, right? So we were all like guitars. And, you know, that was the cool thing about Camp Copperhead, is that it was all kind of like-minded guys, right? We're all Steve Earle fans. We're all kind of songwriters. We take this stuff very seriously. You know, most of us aren't professionals, right? We usually have day jobs, but this is a passion, right? So it was a lot of that going on. We all ended up like doing these guitar pulls like all through the hours of the morning. And like you said, you're up on that porch and just going back and forth playing songs. And there were so many great guitars there too, right? Everybody's got a Martin or a Gibson. And, you know, I brought my snare drum there so I could play some brushes. And it was just such a good time jamming. you know, playing all of our songs and then covers and stuff too, right?
It was crazy. I still remember everybody going, well, Steve is only a couple of bungalows down the road. Let's try to wake him up and play, let's play Copperhead Road. So we're yelling Copperhead Road at the top of our lungs trying to wake him up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he was mentioning that. Yeah, I could hear you guys having some fun there last night or whatever the next morning in the lecture thing. So yeah, good times. And I guess so. Let's get right into it. I guess you're a songwriter. When did you kind of become a musician and a songwriter? And kind of how did it come to this CD being put out? Now, Tom, this is your first record, right? This is the first thing you've ever kind of recorded and put out. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything started and changed September 9th, 1964, and I think that's when the Beatles showed up on Ed Sullivan's show, and me and a million other kids said, that's what I want to do. And so I picked up the guitar around that time. But in my hometown, we had a lot of phenomenal musicians, and I quickly realized that I was never going to be technically as good as they are on guitar, or I was never going to be the singer that some of these people were. So I figured I'd start writing songs. I started writing songs when I was 13, 14, and I've been doing it ever since.
Yeah.
And
where is that, Tom? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in upstate New York at the Military Academy at West Point.
Okay.
And so there's a West Point, Highland Falls are sister towns, and I talk a lot about Highland Falls in many of the songs, but they're connected. Right outside of the gate is a small town, and that's where the local high school is and everything that everybody from West Point would go to. But it was a little different place growing up because, you know, it's a whole military environment. And to me, it was perfectly normal, but, you know, looking back at it, it's really a different world.
Yeah.
But I started playing guitar really, really young, and the only really hobby I have is writing songs. And so I've been working on that every day my entire life. Mm-hmm. And I really never got into the thought never crossed my mind of recording an album until I wound up going to Camp Copperhead, and everybody started releasing their own CDs and their own albums. And I thought to myself, well, gee, if everybody could do it, I might as well try it myself. The only problem was trying to figure out how to get it done and how to get it started, but somehow I was able to connect with just the absolutely right people, and I connected with some superior musicians and engineers and producers, and sheer luck. But awesome. You know, I wound up getting some really fantastic people out of LA. My daughter's a kind of a professional musician, and she has an all-girl a cappella group, and she's into that whole world there in L.A., and she introduced me to the engineer for the album, and, you know, he brought in a jazz trio called Spare Keys, and those guys were phenomenal, and they're the core in the on the CD. Stephen Hacker wound up producing it, and he plays drums, and Rob Hall plays bass, and Aaron Durr is the keyboard player. And those guys are just some of the best. And they all teach, I guess, locally down in the Music Institute in L.A., and they wound up bringing in the additional artists, with whether it be the sax players or the trumpet or the violinist or the mandolin player. And everybody was better than the next. So I just got really lucky.
Feel so strung out with the early morning blues. I just can't get up and face the day. I feel so strung out and I don't know what to do. Can't imagine living this life strung out without you.
Yeah, that's excellent, man. And I could tell that on the CD. You sent me a copy, and it's like half of it's kind of like rock and roll, kind of songwritery, kind of Springsteen stuff. We'll get into that in a second. But there's also like kind of a jazzy kind of side to it too. And I guess that's the was that your songwriting or was that the musicians? Do you think that element of the some of the songs on here?
That song, Strung Out, changed. So when I submitted the demo to them, it had a guitar harmony where, you know, the trumpet melody is and the violin melody is. And the drummer, Stephen Hacker, he had this idea, let's change the harmony guitar to a trumpet. And when we did that, the whole thing turned into like a smoky barroom type of sound. It really changed dramatically. He also had this idea, let's do it a back and forth kind of duet. So actually it was my daughter singing, which is kind of strange, but she sang that song with me. It came out really well. It changed dramatically from the demo, but if you heard the demo, you would go, wow, that's the exact same melody. It's just changed from a rockin' type of song to a jazzy type of song.
Yeah.
Although I used a lot of major sevenths, and major sevenths and kind of give you that jazz feel.
Yeah, that's cool, man. And we should say the record is called Call Me Ishmael. That's the last track on the record, Ishmael. I dig that one. I assume it's not autobiographical, right? I noticed a lot of your songwriters is kind of like a lot of character songwriting. Story songs and stuff like that. I noticed a lot on
there's
this.
There's a lot of layers to that song. I mean, that song, first of all, I wanted to do something that sounded kind of like Copperhead Road. I came back from camp and I was like, I got to do something that has a Steve Earle Copperhead Road type of sound. And I came up with that riff, and it's kind of a Deliverance type of riff. And I did it all with his drop D type of tuning that he talked about in camp. So, and without the drop D tuning, I couldn't have done some of the different riffs that I wound up doing in that song. So, but the whole thing was about exotic animal smuggling, and I did it before that, whatever his name, Tiger King or whatever, before that came out. I was ahead of him on that one.
Yeah, nice.
And so it's all about exotic animal smuggling, and it's from the perspective of the protagonist is a parrot. So Ishmael is a parrot. So it's not really me, and then we talk about Jesus in the song, but Jesus is really his buddy, who's a jungle cat. So it has that whole side to it. And then I did the whole thing as a kind of an analogy, if you will, or metaphor to Herman Melville's Moby Dick, which is where "Call Me Ishmael" comes from, because it's like the opening line to Moby Dick, and. Just to mix it up and make a bigger soup of the whole thing, I threw in, I think I've told you before when we've talked, that I'm a big fan of prog rock.
Yeah.
And so I threw in this, like, huge proggy type of bridge right with the, you know, a Genesis-sounding, you know, drum beat right before the cat attacks. The whole concept of that instrumental is that's when the cat is sneaking up through the grass, and he attacks the camp and just, you know, tears the camp apart. But it's done with a slide guitar, and it's really a proggy type of setup. So I kind of been telling everybody it's outlaw country prog is my genre for that. With no fear.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I dig that one. I dig Winter Highland Falls and Mind Torn Road. I remember that one because you played that one in camp, I'm pretty sure. That one
That's the one I came off stage and I look at you and I go, I don't know how he plays these things all night. You know, I'm like sweating. I'm worn out from doing one song.
Yeah, and that one, a lot of internal rhymes and stuff like that. And I hear a lot of Springsteen influence on that song in particular. Let's talk about some Springsteen. How has he been an influence on your songwriting and your music?
You know what? He's a huge influence on my writing style. You know, I dissected a lot of his songs to try to understand why people like them so much.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's kind of a interesting conundrum because he has these really uplifting musical melodies, but he combines them with very dark lyrics.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you listen to like Dancing in the Dark, right? Sounds like it's really an upbeat. Man, that's a
dark song.
Yeah, it's a dark song.
And there's always that twist. There's always that third verse or that one line that you might miss. But if you really get into it, you're like, oh, there's the whole story right there where it gets turned around in the third verse or some really dark turn or something like that, you know? So,
I mean, I love his song construction. And he uses, in addition to really, you know, interesting and fun rhyme schemes, he uses a lot of imagery in his songs. And so, you've got all this imagery, you've got all of these great rhyme schemes, and then he throws in these really pretty melodies with guitar and piano hooks. And to me, I'm the person that really loves the super long songs that he did, like the Kitty's Back or Rosalita or Jungle Land.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hear a lot of those, the first two or three Springsteen records, particularly in your music. Were you a fan, like, right from the start? But, like, when he came out with Greetings, were you like, I got to check this out? Or were you kind of late to becoming a Springsteen fan?
I was a little bit later. So I went to school in upstate New York to a place called SUNY Oswego, which is about 45 minutes dead north of Syracuse, right on Lake Ontario. And I'm telling you, talk about Antarctica University. I mean, you're on the bottom part of the lake. It's just nothing but snow and wind, and it's brutal. And for whatever reason, right after he came out of his London concert with Born to Run, he went to Oswego. I don't know why he didn't go to Syracuse, but somehow whoever the powers be at our little college got him to go to Oswego. So they had to coerce me to go to the gym to see him. I was like, nah, I'm really into, you know, it's not my style of music. I was in the Peter Gabriel, Lamb Lies Down on Broadway type of, you know, frog stuff. And and they said, no. You really got to go. You're going to love this show. And you know, so the promise of wine, women, song, and maybe toxic chemicals or something. And so I went there, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing. He came in and he blew the roof off of the small college gym, and he put this show on, and it's the same show pretty much that was, it's on the CD from the box set, right, of Born to Run. But
yeah, Hammersmith, I mean, that's 75, right? So this is right, the Born to Run tour. This is the new E Street Band, right? Max Weinberg, Roy Bittner there, Stevens joined the band, and he's just ready to take over the world, and here you are seeing him like...
Yeah, December 75. My jaw is hanging down the whole time. It was a whole theatrical production being done in a small college gym. I'd never seen anything like that. It changed my whole thought process of what was going on in the world of rock. And I was like, oh my God, this guy is... He's amazing. What he knows about.
Yeah, this is like where he's wearing the big wool hat and he had the beard and the leather jacket and he's like just rocking. And then you got this big black guy in a white suit next to him playing sax. And you're like, you got this other guy like with a hat on, Miami Steve, right? And you're like, what am I seeing? Piano player,
organ
player.
Those are the photos.
Yeah.
Those are the photos in my college yearbook. That's exactly my college yearbook photos. He's got the wool hat. He's got the, you know, beach cutoff shirt sleeve. You've got Clemens, and of course you got Miami Steve is all dressed up and all booted up. It's exactly what happened.
Yeah, good times. So were you a fan like going forward? Oh, I got to get Born to Run. I got to get Darkness as soon as that comes out.
Or... Oh, I bought everything. I bought every underground album I could buy, and to this day I buy everything that, you know, that gets released on Nugs.net. When Nugs comes out with a with a new concert release, I buy it.
Really?
I bought every single thing he's bought.
Wow, that's impressive. So, yeah, let's talk then. I guess so. If you followed whole career, you got a favorite album. Can you pick one out of the, what is he got, like 18, 17, 18 records? Can you pick one favorite album to take to the desert island?
You know, because I went to that Born to Run show, it's been Born to Run.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I found about Born to Run is I think that's the turning point for him. That's when his lyrics matured. His music was always really uplifting and emotional, but his lyrics and his rhymes were always really good, but didn't always make a lot of sense. And when we moved into Born to Run, his lyrics started to solidify, and he got a lot better with the lyrics.
I think he consciously wanted to kind of, you know, say the same potent things in fewer words than he was doing in the previous albums, try and maybe condense his songs, get them on AM radio kind of thing. And I think a lot of that was also John Landau being kind of that kind of guy to give him some advice and this kind of, you know, a mentor, producer kind of, you know, a guy whose opinion he valued at the period where he was shaping, you know, where his songwriting would go and where his music would go, right, putting the E Street Band together.
I think that's where, the Landau Appel fight started was on the recording. Because I think it took him forever to record Born to Run. I think it was like a 14-month marathon to get that thing recorded. But the thing about Born to Run, which I think it's the only album he recorded that he wrote by, wrote this way, he wrote all the songs on piano.
Yep.
I think, except for like the opening for Born to Run, I think the opening riff for Born to Run he wrote on guitar, but everything else he says he wrote on piano.
Yeah, very piano.
And that's why you get all these really cool little piano riffs in all of these songs. And I kind of hope he goes back and he does that again somewhere, because I think that's what gave that Born to Run vibe was the piano construction.
Well, yeah, it gave it that sort of epic, kind of cinematic thing with the long piano intros and everything, right? Yeah. So have you seen him live throughout the years besides that first incredible show in 75?
Yeah, I have. I've seen him out here in L.A. a couple of times. I saw him back in New York a couple of times. So I've probably seen him 5-6 times.
Oh, yeah? You got any standout memories or moments? Any you remember any songs that were spectacular or anything like that?
Nothing tops the first time I saw him because when you see something for the first time and you're not expecting anything, and I came in with absolutely no expectations and I was blown away. I don't think there's anything that can happen to top. And I mean, he did the whole show in 75 right before Christmas, so he did the Santa Claus is coming to town bit, and it was non-stop amazing. The show we saw, he did Pretty Flamingo, which is the Man for Man song, and he does a very, very long monologue throughout that song, which I thought was, at the time, was just a really great song. And it took a long time before he was able to add that one to my collection, but that was really a fun song to watch him do.
Yeah, he's such a great, besides being such a great songwriter, he's such a great entertainer too, right? He can deliver this stuff live, even when he sucks you in with those monologues, and you're just hanging on every word, right? He's a storyteller. He's really, you know, I think one of the greatest musicians, entertainers of the last, you know, 100 years, no doubt, for sure.
And the thing is, the more I learned, the more I read about him, you know, you can see where he's really, he went out and he like studied like Sam and Dave, he would study James Brown, and so he would take different aspects of things that they did in their shows, and he would incorporate it into his live show, and it just became bigger and better because of it.
Yeah, so good. So we'll see what he does in the future. I wonder what's going to happen. Everything's on hold, I guess, right now. We were hoping to get an E Street Band tour around this time, you know, and he was, you know, mentioning that he was going to do it, and he's working on an E Street Band record right now. So I guess just time will tell when he's going to drop that in a big tour. Can't wait.
Well, he said he wrote, you know, the spirit moved him, and he wrote a whole, you know, an album's worth of music in addition to Western Star just geared for the full band.
Yeah.
So I don't know what he wrote, but I'm really intrigued to see what he came up with, because he really hasn't been doing. His last couple of albums have all been bits and pieces of this and that he's thrown together, but he hasn't really sat down and done a concentrated full album since, I don't know, The Rising or Magic, I think.
Well, Wrecking Ball was 2012. That was probably the last one. And you think, too, the last...
Yeah, but that was... The Wrecking Ball was a lot of bits and pieces of stuff, though.
Yeah, he had a couple on there. Land of Hope and Dreams was kind of leftover. But in the last 5-6 years, too, he's been very reflective, right? Like, he did that kind of River box set, and he revisited that on a whole tour. Then he did the Born to Run book. Then he did Springsteen on Broadway. And even Western Stars kind of got that reflective looking back on a lifetime kind of vibe to it, right? So we'll see where he goes with his next album.
You know we need a country album from him. I mean, he's done everything but a country album, so that's got to be there somewhere.
Well, Western Stars was creeping there. Western Stars was kind of like that that West Coast country kind of Glen Campbell kind of thing, I think, you know. But who knows if he's going to put together a full, you know, steel guitar kind of country album, you know. He could do it. He can do anything. He can do anything, man. You know what? I wish he would do like a rock and roll record. Like, I'm talking about not an E Street Band rock and roll record. I'm talking like a 4-piece band, like drums, guitar, bass, piano, and that's it. Like, I think he would just, you know, a 4-piece band kind of rock album would be kick-ass rock and roll.
And he's one of these guys that needs 50 people on stage with him lately. He's like,
I don't like that, yeah. The fewer people on stage, the better for me, because, you know, I can hear things better, you know.
I do think that at some point we're going to see the Springsteen biop movie. I think he's going to have to, you know, out Freddie Mercury and get one of those out. And
I don't know, man.
He
doesn't really have that dark part that a biopic needs, right? He doesn't have a drug addiction. He never like had a bad divorce. He never beat anybody up. He doesn't really have a dark point. So I don't know how they would shape that, you know.
Well, I think, you know, he's one of these kids that came off the street and rose from, you know, the streets of Jersey. So I don't know. You're right. He doesn't have anybody that died, although he did have kind of a tough upbringing with his father, and he did suffer from depression, and he did have some of those issues, but yeah. It's not like, you know.
It's almost like they'd have to focus on maybe like the 65 to 75 period, and then when he hits Born to Run, that the movie ends when it's one of those kind of movies or something like that. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I kind of see an Eddie and the Cruisers just with Springsteen in it.
We could do a little better than Eddie and the Cruisers, I think. Once again, I want everybody to check out your record, Call Me Ishmael. Where can people find more information about that record and Tom Cerzak?
Well, it's funny. Everything's under my name, and I thought that would be so easy, right? But then I realized, nobody can spell my name.
Yeah, nobody can spell Cerzak.
So I have the website of Tom Cerzak, and I'm selling the CDs out of there because right now nobody's taking CDs. So you can download the music at iTunes. So you can download it off Amazon. It's streaming on every major streaming service. You can get it off of Spotify, et cetera. So it's out there. It's all under my name.
Cool. And spell the name. That's TomCiurczak. .com.
Absolutely right. Correct.
Right.
Yep, .com. You got it.
Cool, man. Well, so great to talk to you, Tom, my fellow Copperhead, fellow Bruce Springsteen fan.
Yeah, it's been a blast, man.
Been in LA for about 3 days, I guess, you know. Not too long. Yeah. And it's like and it's like one thing I notice is that people look different out here. They look different than they do back east. People tend, I think, to get more dressed up out here, you know. And it's like because like back east I lived on this street. Was right on this highway, was on South Street. Was on Highway 9, passed right by my house, right? And But I live close to town, so close to town. And every day, about 5 o'clock and 12 o'clock, there was this one girl, you know, and she used to she used to work downtown, you know. And she used to walk by my house every day, you know. And like me and Steven, used to sit out on my porch, you know, used to sit out there. And we find out what time it is. It's 4:30, man. It's 4:45. We hustle out there, you know. And we sit down. And we say, now today, you're going to go up, Steven. I said, Steven, today, you're going to go up. You say, hi, my name is Steve. Mm-hmm. You know, what's your name? You know, see, we plan all this stuff out. I was going to do this, you know. She's like one of them girls that was like, they sit there like a fool, you know. And afraid to go up and say hello to, you know. So we try to get everybody on the street at the time to go up and, you know, find out what her name was, you know. And the only cats that would go near, there's this one crazy guy. Like, he, you know, we say, now, man, go up to her. You find out what her name is, you're crazy. See, she won't think nothing, just go on up. See, now, really, if you're crazy, you can get away with lots of stuff, you know. Really, that's the truth. It's like, you know, it's like people always face somebody that acts nuts, you know. This little guy was smaller than me. You know, I used to hang out with him on the weekends. Like, he'd go into pool halls. He'd, like, go up to the table where, like, the heaviest cats are playing, you know. They got, like all this money on the game. He'd, like, take the eight ball and, like, throw it across the table, you know, knock in all the ball. But they never used to beat him up because they thought he was nuts, you know. So I was hanging out with him, you know. But even he wouldn't go up and say nothing to her, so. So this went on for like a few years, I guess. And then like I moved away, you know, so it wasn't. So now to begin with, but out here in LA, like we came out of here. Like there's lots of, I guess everybody looks different out here. Look different in back east, you know. There's lots of girls like that out here. Seems to be, ain't it? Class watching them all, you know. But we never found out what her name was. We used to always call her something. We used to have this name, we used to call her. Is that the name? Yeah. And all the guys on my block, they called her Flamingo, 'cause her hair shines like the sun, and her eyes light up the sky. When she walks, she moves so fine, like a flamingo. Out of sight. I know what I'm gonna say. I'm gonna say.
Shave the way the weeds ever seen that cemetery, then go there if you will. There's a lady in the water, and she wears a bridal veil, and I wish I had a lover for to fail. And the city is a ghost town, and the sun is setting west, and I wish I had a lover to hold to my breast. These feathers and these anchors, they always weigh me down, and I wish I had a lover in this town.
It's so good to talk to a friend and fellow copperhead. Gordon Berry, how you doing, buddy?
Hi, Lee. How are you, Keith? You all right?
Yeah, very good, very good. And we haven't spoken in about five, 6 years. We met there at the first Camp Copperhead songwriting masterclass that Steve Earle put on there, right?
2014, I believe.
2014. That was
first one.
Yeah, such an incredible week, and I'm still grateful for the relationships, the friendships I've made with, you know, some fellow songwriters, especially with you two. And you've really blossomed, I think, over the last, you know, 5-6 years as a songwriter, singer-songwriter. Tell us a little bit about that. How your career's gone? When did you decide to start writing songs and all that stuff? What got you to Camp Copperhead?
I think I was relatively late to the game. In I was about 20. I know some kids start playing guitar, write songs when they're like 12.
Yeah.
But yeah, and obviously it wasn't natural. It took a long time to hone my craft anyway, my voice too or whatever. But I think things really started to be serious probably 2012. So. Start planning on a first real release, writing songs around that I was comfortable with. And around that same year, 2014, I released my first EP, Sojourning. I believe I toured New York that summer and ended up at Camp Copperhead.
Yeah, cool, man. And what was your inspiration? You're from you're from Ireland, right? What's the city you're from there?
Wexford,
yeah. So I guess you're in your late teens, early 20s, and you're really getting into songwriting. You wanted to take that craft. Was there an artist, a specific musician or anything that inspired you to kind of be like, yeah, I want to play guitar, I want to write some songs, I want to sing some songs?
Yeah, well, you know yourself, when you're finding your feet with music, I don't know about you, but it was hard rock for me. It was
yeah, for sure.
it was like Wasp and Motley Crue and yeah. Iron Maiden and Guns N' Roses, and then obviously the grunge thing kicked off, and but I don't know why I kind of leaned towards more country, and I guess Steve and Springsteen and Johnny Cash really kind of got me into that thing, and then it was more Jimmy Rogers, Hank Williams,
yeah,
stuff like that.
Well, that's excellent, man. Springsteen, Steve Earle, Johnny Cash, you're ringing all my bells there, man. Those are three those are three of my heroes, right? So yeah, and I noticed a lot of your music, I encourage people to check out, you know, a few of your albums. You put out a few albums, right? A few EPs, a full length in the last five,
the first years, EP, so? Yeah, the first EP, Sojourning, and then the album Best Way to Kill a Monster 2017, and a new EP just a couple of weeks ago, All the Live Long Year.
Yeah. And it's mostly, I guess I would say, kind of acoustic, country-ish songwriter, Steve Earle, Johnny Cash, Bruce Springsteen kind of thing.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Yeah, I think so, yeah. Folk, country.
Yeah, the...
very easy listen.
Yeah, let's talk about Springsteen a little bit there. I, as far as the Springsteen influence in your music, obviously, with the acoustic thing, I kind of hear a lot of Nebraska, Ghost of Tom Joad, that kind of thing. Tell us a little bit about Springsteen. When did you become a fan of him, and when did his music kind of make an impact on your songwriting and your music?
Yeah, I can't remember specifically when, but I think the first album I got was The River.
Yeah.
Because I heard Stolen Car and something. So, obviously, that's one of the best, one of my favorites. Nebraska is the more stripped down. He's basically solo.
Yeah.
But I think the one that made most of an impact on me was The Ghost of Tom Joad.
Really, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Youngstown and Ghost of Tom Joad, I learned those two songs, and that kind of got me writing a whole lot of songs in A minor, F, C, G.
Yeah. You ever seen Springsteen live in concert? Being in Ireland, I know he's huge when he goes to Europe, and especially Ireland, because he does have some Irish heritage, right? He's half Irish, Italian, Irish Dutch, and Italian. I think there is his heritage. So, you know, are you able to being from Ireland yourself? Are you able to recognize any of that Irish influence in his music?
I think you can definitely hear it in the later stuff. You can definitely hear it in American Land, and definitely did Seeger Sessions, even though they're not his songs, but like you can hear where he definitely started learning his craft.
Yeah, there's definitely a love for, I think, for singer-songwriters over in Ireland, right? Guys like yourself, just with guitars, singing their songs, kind of folk-influenced music. And I think a lot of people can relate to Springsteen that way, even though he's singing about maybe some blue-collar American ideals. You know, people in Ireland and Europe can really relate to kind of that sort of Americana genre of music. And you know, just someone actually, you know, writing songs from the heart and from the soul, right?
Of course, man, yeah. That's what the Irish songwriter is kind of all about. From Luke Kelly and the Dubliners and Shane McGowan. And everyone identifies with Bruce's music because it's blue-collar and it's factory workers. And that's just a lot of that here, like.
As far as you playing gigs in Ireland, what kind of gigs are you playing? Like, do you have a full band? Are you kind of you're mainly a solo guy, aren't you? A solo performer? Or?
Mainly solo, because you know yourself, it's cheaper.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. Like I learned a long time ago, like, trying to put bands together and everything like that, it's just easier if I do everything myself, you know?
Absolutely, man. Yeah. But I've played a couple of times. It's been 90% solo, but a couple of times I have a friend that plays... Dobro and banjo, and I've played with a couple of violin players. I'm not sure if I've played full band, maybe once or twice. But it's something I'd love to do, but it's more you need to pay those guys, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And your albums are used other musicians. I was listening to Devil and Saint Jesus. Great organ on that. Great pedal steel. So for your records, I guess, are you going into a studio and recording with friends and session musicians, mostly?
Yeah, session musicians. I became friends with a very good piano player, and he has everything. He plays the Hammond B3, which is my favorite, one of my favorite organs.
Best,
He has Wurlitzer's Rhodes. So when I go into the studio up there, those lads fill out the songs for me.
Have you played any live gigs with them, or has it been all solo up to now?
Never, but I do hope to play with them when the time is right. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
That's cool. You ever covered any Springsteen songs in concert? You mentioned you learned Youngstown, Ghost of Tom Joad. Didn't you post something on Facebook? I think I might have saw that. You did a version of Ghost of Tom Joad, I think.
Ghost of Tom Joad, yeah. I love that tune. That song actually, I think, kind of got me into Steinbeck as well, which was a big influence on the lyrics. But I've played...
Yeah, that's the book, The Grapes of Wrath, right? The song was based upon, yeah.
Yeah. So I've played that. I've played Youngstown. I played Wreck on the Highway, like, a lot of times.
Yeah, I like that.
I think that really kind of got me learning the simplicity of songs. I think I've played Factory.
Yeah, you talked about The River, how that was kind of your introduction record to Springsteen. That's probably a good entry point for Springsteen. You know, that double album kind of covers, you know, all aspects of his songwriting, right? You have, like, some good rockers on there. You have, like, some party dance music. You have, you know, some introspective things like Independence Day. You have some love songs, I Want to Marry You, Fade Away. And then you have, like, some country-ish things, right? Like you said, Stolen Car, Wreck on the Highway. So you see all of those influences coming out in that album, you know?
Yeah, and I think the second disc, or record maybe, is my favorite because you got Stolen Car, Point Blank... And Drive All Night is one of my favorites.
Yeah, I love Price You Pay. That's on that second record.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
You ever seen The Boss live in concert, Gordon?
Only once.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
When was that? That was Wrecking Ball. So was that 2013 or something?
Yeah, 2012, 2013. I'm not sure when he went to Europe on that tour, but Yeah, Wrecking Ball. That was that was the big band. That was the huge East Street band. He had like 15 guys on stage, I think, for that tour, right?
Yeah, it's unreal, man. It's an unreal album. But that was the only time I seen him in Kilkenny, in Nolan Park here in Ireland. And he played for 3.5 hours, which is standard.
Yeah.
But I remember because I've seen Dylan before, I've seen Neil Young before, and sometimes they'd hit the 2.5 hour mark, and I'd be kind of thinking, yeah, I'm kind of done now.
Yeah.
But I was just left wanting more for Springsteen at that gig.
Wow, that's amazing.
And the standout track, believe it or not, because he played all the classics, was Jack of All Trades for me.
Yeah, that
it was just standout.
Yeah, that Wrecking Ball album's not one of my favorites in his catalog, but there are some songs on that I really love, and you know, a couple of the dark ones, Jack of All Trades, I really love, and This Depression, I think, are two standout tracks on that one. But Jack of All Trades, he was playing that live on that tour. I think he almost had a string section at some point during that song. I don't know if it was probably not for Euroshow, probably didn't bring the strings over to Europe, but
yeah, I can't remember. I just remember it was fairly epic.
The hurricane blows and brings a hard rain when the blue sky breaks. It feels like the world's gonna change. We'll start caring for each other like Jesus said that we might. I'm a jack of all trades. Maybe we'll be alright. Sometimes tomorrow comes soaked in treasure and blood. Yeah, we stood the drought. Now we'll stand the flood. There's a new world coming. I can see the light. I'm a jack of all trades. Maybe we'll be alright. So you use what you got, and you learn to make do. Yeah, you take the old, and you make it new. If I had me a gun, I'd find the bastards and shoot them on sight. I'm a jack of all trades. Yeah, we'll be alright. I'm a jack of all trades. We'll be alright.
But there's some stompers on that Wrecking Ball album. Some real go-getters at the start, you know.
Yeah, We Take Care of Our Own. That's a great rocker.
Mm-hmm. Some great tunes.
Good stuff, man. Have you checked out his book, the autobiography, Springsteen on Broadway? Any of that stuff?
Oh yeah, like anything he releases. So I read the book, And then I got the audio book because I heard he was reading it himself on it.
Yeah, that's
so it's
cool.
Great to listen to him talk about it.
Yeah, I haven't got that yet. I need to get that, Gordon, because that's really cool.
Yeah, you do.
Just to hear Springsteen telling you his story. Because the one thing I got from reading that book, it reads just like him talking to you, right? Like, it's what you expect.
Absolutely.
Right? So when you get the audio book, I can imagine it's the same deal, right? So
yeah, and the Broadway gig is great. That's great to listen to, too.
Yeah, I actually prefer the audio than the video. To the Broadway, right? I got it on vinyl.
Too.
I got the four record vinyl set, and I just love it. Just to put it on, and you get like that, you know, the 5-10 minute little monologue of him kind of setting the song up, and then you got the delivery of the song, which is this is a great concept for that one man show that he did, right?
Yeah, what did he do for like 100 and something days?
Yeah, it was over a year, wasn't 100? It? Didn't you get a year and a half out of
was
it? Something like that. I don't know.
Well, that would have been great to get, though, wouldn't it?
It would have, yeah. I couldn't get there. That was infamously a very expensive ticket to get to that show. So I didn't bother trying to go down there and deal with it. Yeah, it's definitely a great thing, and I do love that kind of the last, you know, 5 years of Springsteen. He's kind of been doing this reflective thing, looking back on his career as he's, you know, turning 70 years old with a book, Springsteen on Broadway. You know, even his last record, Western Stars, is kind of reflective. Some of the songs on that are kind of looking back on your past, kind of thing, right? So
the film that went with it as well.
Yeah. What do you think the future looks like for Springsteen, man? What do you think he's going to do next? I guess we're kind of the E Street Band tour and album is on hold. That I guess he's working on right now.
I don't know what he'll do next. I imagine he's writing away through all this. I'd like him to do an album like Nebraska again. Just him and the guitar, because I thought Western Stars was going to be that, but it's a very grand album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Western Stars had that country flavor, but more of kind of like a West Coast Glen Campbell like epic production with strings, right? So it would be nice to have him like, or even I was talking to another fellow Copperhead, Tom Surzak, and he was mentioning he'd like a country record, like even go more country, like. That would be great too. I've always said
that'd be great.
Yeah, I've always said I would like a rock and roll record from him, like a strip, like 3-piece, 4-piece band kind of rock record. But who knows? He can do no wrong. I think he's working on an E Street Band project just because the nature of that band, right? You got eight or nine guys that are kind of, you know, in their 70s now. So you kind of, if we're gonna do one more trek around the globe with that great band, now's the time where I think Springsteen will definitely, you know, put out a solo record. And he said, like, if he can, he'll be 85, like, just sitting in a chair singing his songs by himself. You know, he's not going to quit ever, so.
Of course he will, man, and hopefully he will as well. Hopefully he'll be in good shape to do that.
Like, I love Johnny Cash, right? And I love those kind of last years of Johnny Cash, even though he was kind of ailing a little bit and his voice wasn't where it was before, but he was still being able to put out some great music. You know, I think Springsteen definitely has that in him as he approaches like his 80s, I guess we're talking now.
Yeah, a country album, a pure country album would be great. What about a rockabilly album?
That's what I mean. Yeah, rockabilly album, like just a 3-piece band, guitar, bass, drums, or guitar, bass, drums, piano kind of thing.
Yeah,
he can pull it off, man. He can do.
Yeah,
he's proven, right? He's proven it that he can do anything, right?
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? As long as you got quality songwriting as your foundation, whatever you want to do will kind of work. Whatever genre you want to explore, like, he's very disciplined and a great songwriter, and he's been able to pull off, you know, different left turns going into the Seeger Session thing, going into something like Wrecking Ball, where he's doing, you know, he's got some beats on there, like some hip hop grooves and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you can do no wrong.
Didn't he play something to do with a live link to Fenway Park recently?
Yeah, they had one of those bands, was it the Dropkick Murphys? They did one of those like empty stadium live stream shows, and I think he joined them via, like, they were like in the stadium on the field playing, and he was showed up like on a video on the like the Jumbotron screen there, and they kind of jammed a couple songs that way, which was kind of neat, you know.
Yeah,
that's the thing. That's one thing I'll ask you before we, I let you go here, Gordon. Is people are changing the way they're delivering music these days. Like, fortunately, with this whole lockdown and pandemic thing, that all the digital streams and that kind of thing are able to benefit musicians like ourselves that are releasing music, and we're still able to do that, but we're not able to play live. How has that affected your music, and has it changed any of your plans for the next foreseeable future with your music?
I think it's changed everyone's plans, Lee. I had a new EP out, and obviously I was going to launch and do some gigs, but didn't get to do that. But I done it online, as everyone's doing now on Zoom and whatever. But gigs are slowly starting to come back in smaller crowds.
Right.
So it's not all doom and gloom. I don't think it is anyway.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, one door closes, another door opens kind of thing like that. Like,
absolutely.
Obviously, you're never going to beat being in a room with an energetic audience and, you know, feeding off that chemistry between the band and the audience. And, you know, that's a big thing of those E Street Band shows. So, you know, hopefully sooner than later we can get everybody in a stadium and rock out and put our fists in the air. But until then, it's nice to explore some of these other avenues. So,
That'll come back around.
Yeah.
But maybe for now, maybe Bruce will do some solo stuff with socially distanced crowds, and that might be nice as well.
Yeah. We'll see, man. We'll see. Well, that was great, Gordon. So good to talk to you, and I encourage people to check out all your music. Tell them where they can hear some songs by you and find out more about Gordon Berry. The new EP is called All the Live Long Year, correct?
Yeah. That's just out recently. That's everywhere. It's on Spotify if you like streaming stuff, iTunes if you like buying stuff, and GordonBerryMusic.com. You can buy a physical CDs on there.
Excellent, man. So I encourage people to check that out. If you're a fan of Springsteen, Steve Earle, that kind of singer-songwriting stuff, Gordon Berry is going to be the guy for you.
I hope so.
All right, thanks so much, Gordon. Right, that was good, buddy.
Thanks for having us, Lee. I'll talk to you again really soon.
Here in Northeast Ohio, back in 1803, James and Danny Heaton found a yard that was lined in yellow creek. They built a blast furnace here along the shore, and then they built the cannonball to help the Union win the war. Here in Youngstown, here in Youngstown, my sweet Jenny, I'm sinking down here in Youngstown. My daddy come home, the highways, when he come home from World War II. Now the yard's just scrap and rubble. He said them big boys did what Hitler couldn't do. These mills, they built the tanks and bombs that won this country's war. We sent our sons to Korea and Vietnam. Now we're wondering what they're dying for. Here in Youngstown, here in Youngstown, my sweet Jenny, I'm sinking down here, darling, in Youngstown. My sweet Jenny, I'm sinking down in Youngstown.
From the Monongahela Valley to the Mesabi Iron Range, to the coal mines of Appalachia, the story's always the same. 700 tons of metal a day, and so you tell me the world's changed. Once I made you rich enough to forget my name. In Youngstown, in Youngstown, I'm sinking down here in Youngstown. When I die, I don't want no part of heaven. I'll not do heaven's work well. I pray the devil
to stand in the fiery furnaces of
Thanks again to Gordon and Tom for joining me on the show. Be sure to check out more of their music. Links to their websites are in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk with you next time.
So, that's the show, folks. Thanks for listening. You can find us on our website at trampslikeuspod.com. Communicate with us on Facebook at our Tramps Like Us podcast group page. Tramps Like Us podcast is a nonprofit audio fanzine created by fans for fans and is available for free. We are not affiliated with Bruce Springsteen or Columbia Sony Records. If you've heard any music you like, please find it and purchase it from brucespringsteen.net, Amazon, your local record store, or wherever music is sold. As always, gratitude and respect to Bruce Springsteen and all past and current members of the heart-stopping, pants-dropping, hard-rocking, booty-shaking, earthquaking, love-making, Viagra-taking, history-making, testifying, death-defying, legendary E Street Band.